powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Oh, man. Happy Friday. Friday the 13th, by the way, Jake. Thankfully, I got us started with some donuts today. You're welcome. It's not because I made another bet. I made another bet, Jake. Why did you need to bring it up yourself?
Because these donuts taste so much sweeter.
Knowing that they were one?
They were one.
All right.
That I had won our bet.
Well, happy Friday the 13th to everyone. Good. Let's focus on making that a good luck day. There is good news. We got an NFL schedule release yesterday. The Seahawks.
Schedule release.
Don't know if you knew that happened, but it came out. So here is what you need to know. The Seahawks have two primetime games. In fact, that's where we're starting. What the NFL schedule release tells us about the Seahawks' national standing. And the answer is, it's not looking great right now. Although, I don't know that that has to do with the Seahawks in their entirety so much as it does if you have a quarterback that is a sellable quarterback. People are buying his jerseys. They're tuning in to watch him. It's Mahomes versus Allen. It's Allen versus Brady. It's Mahomes versus Brady. It's Rodgers versus Wilson, whatever it is. You don't have that right now, which means you got two primetime games. You got week one versus the Denver Broncos at home, Lumen Field, Monday Night Football. What a way to open the season, welcoming home Russell Wilson. We'll see if he gets cheered or booed. Probably a mix of both. And then you have your second primetime game, week 15. You've got a big chunk of time in the middle. December 15th versus the San Francisco 49ers. Both are home games. That one a Thursday night game. I'll throw in that the Seahawks are going to play on Christmas Eve at the Chiefs. That one isn't primetime. It is a Saturday day game on Christmas Eve, though.
Yeah, and that will be a very tough game at the end of the season there in Kansas City. But also one of the things that is odd to note is two of your, star players that you've had for 10 years in Bobby Wagner and Russell Wilson, they finish out, they're the bookends of your season. I mean, you have Wilson starting week one, and then you have Bobby Wagner returning to Seattle week 17. So very weird when it comes to the schedule that way. But I would say that, when it comes to how the schedule plays out, I really like the schedule. I think it's very favorable to the Seahawks, and I'm very encouraged by it. It gives them the best chance to be able to, what I would say is, steal some wins early in the season, right? And to take advantage of some opportunities that may solidify later on in the year in terms of some teams like the New Orleans Saints, for example, or the Arizona Cardinals. You get them week six. That'll be the final week that DeAndre Hopkins is no longer or is still suspended. So there's some opportunities here for the Seahawks to gain some early momentum. And obviously, everyone is going to be hoping that that comes week one. Now, what I will say about week one is that, from a roster perspective, the Denver Broncos they hold the advantage in nearly every area. However, when you look at the coaching aspect of it, for Pete Carroll, knowing Russell Wilson very intimately, when it comes down to just week one in general, Stacy, it can be very volatile, right? I mean, you have great teams that lose week one. You have, bad teams that surprise you. I mean, there's no greater example of this than last year, the Green Bay Packers getting absolutely blown out by the New Orleans Saints and Jameis Winston in week one of last year. You remember that? Mm-hmm. I mean, just absolutely got throttled. And everybody started to wonder, okay, what the heck's going on with the Green Bay Packers and Aaron Rodgers? Oh my gosh, this is going to be a terrible year. And
also, were the Saints like really good?
Right. Yeah. Everybody, Jameis Winston, is he going to be the MVP?
Is this real?
Right. So, I mean, week one is very volatile and it's anybody's ball game, week one, which I think is very, very favorable to the Seahawks versus playing Denver, later on the season when they're most likely to have things put together with a new quarterback and a new head coach. So, I like I said, I like how the schedule plays out. I think it's very favorable to them early on. And then you get that week 11 bye after, their game in Munich, and it allows them to have a nice, strong finish to the season. Obviously, some very tough games in there, but overall, I think it's a pretty good one.
I think a couple things that I was noticing in looking at it is I know that anyone listening does the exact same thing. When the schedule comes out for your favorite team or a team that you follow, regardless of league, you look for where the tough the tough stretches. Where's the tough stretch? Like, where is it going to be a test of this team's perseverance, skill, depth, whatever it is? And every single year I've been able to find it. Every single year I've looked at the schedule and I've said, oh, man, they got, you know, in the month of November, 3 out of 4 road games, and all 3 of those are against the NFC West. And, you know, that'll be a big test. Or maybe you look and say, you know, the beginning of the schedule's tough, but they wrap it up with a couple home games. So if you can get through the beginning chunk, then you can, you know, glide through the end. Everyone kind of looks at it that way. When I looked at this year's schedule, I couldn't find a stretch, an extended stretch, where I thought, this is really tough, which made me realize two things. Number one, that if the Seahawks still had Bobby Wagner and Russell Wilson and had managed to stock up with still like some exciting young talent, because they have stocked up with young talent. So it's like if you could do both, and I felt, you know, like really optimistic about this team, I would think feel great. You know, you look at the schedule and you're like, man, this breaks nicely. This breaks great for the Seahawks. But because they are a team with a lot of question marks, chiefly at quarterback, I have no idea how it's going to break. The second thing it made me realize is that there has been so much change this offseason. And I think with all the news that happened around the NFL, all of us have kind of forgotten about it. As new stories come up, you kind of forget and you move on to something else.
Yeah.
But guys, when I'm looking at this schedule and I'm looking through, the first thing you do, what's the first thing you do, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who's the quarterback? Who's the big guy? Who are they playing?
Right.
And you're looking through it and you're like, man, Falcons against who? Lions? What? Goff? You know, Saints? No Drew Brees. I mean, that's been the case. But, you know, like Giants? Okay, Daniel Jones? Like, yeah, you're going to have a new left tackle and a new defensive end with the Giants that are fantastic, but they're rookies. You go through Tom Brady. Who is Tom Brady? He's the GOAT, is the toughest quarterback on their schedule. Following that, you're facing Patrick Mahomes on Christmas Eve. And then who? You have no other quarterback that really stands out. You got good teams. The Rams are in there, right? Matthew Stafford's great. They obviously just won a Super Bowl, but like,
yeah,
there's no murderer's row of guys that you're facing.
No, there's not. So what it does is it creates opportunities. It creates opportunities for you to play in close ball games and for you to be in position to get some wins, and that to me is the nice part about it for this team. And I will reiterate this over and over again, Stacey. I do not believe that this is going to be a team that makes the playoffs this year. I think that this is a team where, you know, winning and having that competitive mindset is everything. However, winning is not the end all be all in terms of the judgment of this team in 2022. That's not what I'm going to be focused on. That's not what I'm going to be concerned about. I'm not going to be concerned about the wins and losses of this season for the Seattle Seahawks. I'm going to be concerned about development. I'm going to be looking at development. I'm going to be looking at young players. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be looking at the identity of this team on both sides of the ball. What is this defense all about? What is this offense all about? And being able to clearly define that is going to be really important for this team as they move forward, because – you know, Stacey, the last time that Pete Carroll had a true opportunity to rebuild this team basically from scratch, that was back in 2009 to 2013, or 2012, when they got into the playoffs and were a legitimate playoff team, an exciting playoff team. It took them 3 off seasons.
You mean heading into 2010, starting in 2010?
Yeah, starting in 2010, yes. Going into that 2010, 2011, 2012. Yeah. And then that's the type of team you became from that point forward. 3 seasons of drafting. I'm looking at this as a 2 to 3 year window here as to how you build, how you progress into becoming a Super Bowl caliber type of team again if you build it the right way. And this year is going to be very important as to how they lay that foundation. We talked about it via the draft, and it's going to be important that you continue to solidify and lay that foundation down for this season and those young players that you're playing, because there's going to be a whole lot of them, Stacey, that they grow and develop and mature throughout the season. And that's going to be the thing that I am looking at and concerned about the most.
Yeah, no, it's a good point where it's like I feel conflicted, where you want the best for the team that you cover, or maybe you don't. Maybe there's a lot of people that have no rooting interest, but it is more fun to cover a winning team. And I've personally, since I've started working in sports, been covering a winning team. I'm conflicted where, honestly, it's in Seattle's best interest from a quarterback point of view and from stocking up with young talent
right,
to be bad. If I'm being real, like, I know that people don't want to hear tank, and no one wants to hear that, and Pete Carroll is chief among those people that doesn't want to hear the word tank. Like, I guarantee you he is going to be going into the season thinking we're trying to get to a Super Bowl. Like, that is his mindset heading into the season. But I'm not Pete Carroll. I don't have to worry about that kind of stuff. And from my point of view, it's like a, hey, you got 2 firsts and 2 seconds. Sure would be nice if those were pretty high.
Yeah,
just like I'm rooting for the Broncos to be horrible because you got that first round pick. Like,
yes.
It's the exact same reason. I'm thinking long term. I'm thinking year two, year three of the rebuild that you're doing right now, because you entered the offseason prior to the draft, prior to free agency, with so many holes that one offseason is not going to plug those.
No. No, it's not.
So if it's not going to plug them, the best thing for you is to finish with better draft picks. And I know that that's going to rub some people the wrong way. But, like, all I'm saying is, if the season's horrible, the silver lining is that you've got a lot of draft capital in 2023, which is, A, might I remind you, significantly better quarterback class.
Yes. And that is where we're going to get into this conversation later on the show about door number three in this quarterback competition, and what that looks like for this team, and how, you know, we're so focused in and keyed in on Drew Lock and Geno Smith and Jacob Eason at the current moment, because that's who's on the roster. That doesn't mean that that's the right path, the right door for the Seahawks to take. And honestly, I think there are some other options out there for them as they head into this season, and then clearly with their eye on 2023 as to who they can find in terms of really solidifying their future. So really looking forward to getting into that conversation. But, Stacey, I know, look, yesterday was big. Schedule reveal. What kind of party did you have? I know you had the pizza and the wings and all the appetizers.
I told you I only do that for the draft and for the Super Bowl and for every playoff game that I watch.
I don't believe
and
you.
And for big primetime games. That's the only thing I do that for. And for maybe like a really exciting, you know, like a Sunday night game. I did not do that for the schedule release. 5 p.m.
Why?
On a red. Because it's. I feel like we found out too much about the schedule. I was protesting the schedule release. I didn't like the way they did it. I thought that they stretched it out too much, and it was like
I agree.
Yeah, it was like I was going to say commercializing something so special like Christmas, but it was a schedule release, which is already something ridiculous. It's sacred. Leave it alone. All right. We are going to be looking at specifically week one coming up in 15 minutes. Bucky Brooks has a really interesting theory about who has the advantage in this one, and it might surprise a couple of you guys. That's coming up in 15 minutes. Before we get to that, let's get to Headline Rewrites.
Extra, read all about it.
Headline Rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacey.
All right, first up, we have the Mariners look to end their skid against the Mets.
Oh, no.
Who are the National League's best team. What's the real headline?
In related news, I'm looking to end my dating dry spell by talking exclusively to celebrities and models. It's a surefire way to work. It's going to work because the thing is that, you know, you're trying to get back out there into the dating game, and you do it by shooting high. You know what I mean?
I do.
So that's the Mariners. The Mariners are like, let's end this skid. Let's get back on the horse against the National League's best record. Let's go. Max Scherzer. That's called a bounce back pitcher if I've ever seen one.
Yeah. I think it's a good strategy, Stacey.
They are good. Let me tell you
That's going to work out. It's going to work out real good.
They are going to ring up Scherzer. They're going to get.
Oh, they are.
I would say they're going to get. I'm going to throw out 10 hits, 11 hits.
11 hits on Max Scherzer.
I might even say 10, 11 runs.
Wow. This is Friday. Stacey does not care about anything at this point. She's throwing out 10 hits against Max Scherzer.
Yeah, it feels right.
Okay. All right. Somebody's ready for the weekend. That's all I got to say. I mean, look, this is a matchup. Max Scherzer against Marco Gonzalez, not the pitching matchup that I am overly thrilled about. But going against one of the hottest teams in baseball right now in the Mets. But, look, leave it to the classic Mariners of taking a series that no one is picking them to win and watch them go win it. It's without fail. This team is always so unpredictable that you just never know what's going to go on. But kind of got an idea of how this one's going to go against the Mariners.
Much like I have an idea of how things would go were I to date exclusively. Try to date.
Oh,
I should clarify.
What are you talking about?
No, I know. I'm sorry. I'm actually still dating Brian. I totally I am. Me and Brian are very happy together. I keep forgetting that is my real boyfriend. So no. It's all a joke for comedic effect. I am still dating an astronaut who is also a doctor. So in case anyone was wondering,
yeah,
that
the people were worried.
I know. Don't worry. Me and Brian are so happy right now. He's going to be in town this weekend, Jake.
Really?
Yeah. You guys probably won't be able to see him though. We made a lot of plans, so
gotcha.
We'll be busy.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, will you be like out and about in the city or?
Yeah, not where you guys are though. So
okay.
Yeah.
All right. Sorry. Well, if anybody else is out there, see Stacy. Let me know. Let me know if you see Brian. So keep your eyes peeled.
Headline rewrites.
All right. Next up, we have the first game of the NFL season will be between the Super Bowl champion Rams and the Buffalo Bills. It's the real headline.
Real headline. First game of the NFL season will be a legitimately great matchup. Mm. I'm psyched for this one.
Yeah, it really will be. I mean, you talk about star talent, both sides of the ball. I mean, honestly, it's going to be incredible. I can't wait to watch this one. It's going to be really, really fun. And two teams, an AFC team, NFC team that have high hopes and aspirations. Obviously, the Rams being the Super Bowl champs and the Buffalo Bills having, you know, all of the ability in the world to get to the Super Bowl this upcoming season. So I think this is going to be an awesome matchup, and there'll be some legitimate fireworks and plenty of entertainment, that's for sure.
Yeah, later in the show, we're going to talk about our non-Seahawks Week 1 matchup we are most excited to see. So if you guys have already checked out the schedule, you have one in mind, you can text it in a bit later in the show, and we'll break down some of those games. Obviously, we have months still to do that, and some of these teams that we're talking about in Week 1 could look a little bit different by the time the regular season starts, but we'll take an way too early preview and prediction.
Headline rewrites.
And finally, between the NHL and NBA playoffs, there will be four separate Game 7s on Saturday. It's the real headline.
Great news for all you homebodies who didn't really need any excuse to not put pants on this weekend. Have you guys ever seen Bridesmaids?
Yes,
there's
I have.
There's this great scene in the early part of the movie where Kristen Wiig's character is being asked by a guy, like, do you want to take a walk with me? Like, he's hitting on her. And she doesn't want to. She doesn't want to talk to him. So she doesn't come up with an excuse. She just says, I can't. I can't. That is, like, my kindred spirit out there whose friends are like, hey, come out for drinks this weekend. Or like, hey, you want to go, out to this, this party this weekend, this birthday party. Like, all of my kindred spirits out there right now are like, I can't. Yeah. Why can't you? What's going on? I have some laundry that I've been meaning to do, and I have an appointment.
Right.
An appointment is
correct.
What kind of appointment? It's just an appointment.
Usually, when I get asked those questions,
yeah,
I immediately look for my wife. Like,
Brooke, didn't we have something really important to do between the hours of like 9 a.m. and 9 p.m. that we couldn't go to this barbecue thing?
Correct.
Yeah.
And if there is not, I'm gonna be like, you know. So funny, but like, I always forget our schedule, so let me check in.
So we actually are doing something.
I would love to do that with you.
I would love it, but I can't.
Sounds so much fun, but let me check the schedule.
And you're going to say, unfortunately, I'm busy Saturday, and they're going to say, oh, actually, it's Sunday. And you're going to say, did I just say Saturday? No, I meant to say Saturday and Sunday. It's an overnight. Doctor's appointment.
I feel like the millennial generation is 100% the homebody generation.
Oh, COVID made it worse.
Oh, it yes.
Once I got comfortable being like, oh, so now I can just say like, oh, I can't go out. We probably shouldn't.
Yeah.
But now I still do it.
Easiest excuse in the world.
And now you're telling me I've got four Game 7s to watch on top of that?
Having to readjust getting back into society again, it's been a difficult transition because now you actually have to come up with excuses again, right? Like, before, you were a master excuse maker. Now you've got to relearn the art of it.
Question. I'm curious to see if anyone listening has a funnier story because I don't have a funny one about this. But have you guys ever, Brady Bones, you can answer too. Have you guys ever made an excuse or a lie that you realized you had to follow up on and it was almost more work to maintain the lie than it was to just go or just do whatever you were supposed to do?
Oh, yes. I can't say it.
Will you tell us during the break?
Yes, but I, oh yeah, oh yeah, 100%.
Yes.
It got to the point where it was like, why did I do this in the first place? I just should have went.
I once told someone I would be out of town for the weekend, a friend that I would be out of town. And then we were talking, and I'm on a group thread with this person,
mm-hmm.
and we're all watching this show, and I send a picture. We're friends. This person's been to my house, and I take a picture of our TV because we're watching this show, and then I send it, and they're like, wait, I thought you were out of town. And then I had to immediately be like, oh, my God, I meant to tell you my car broke down.
No.
Yes, I did.
No.
I did. And then I go, yeah, I actually, and then you start adding details.
Yes.
I was like, yeah, I have like a 7:30 appointment tomorrow to take it in, to get it fixed. What's wrong with it? It's just a hose. It's just a hose. That I think that's what they said it is. It's a hose. I don't really know. And then they have to be, how was the car appointment? What car appointment?
Yeah, yeah.
You have to make mental notes.
You have to keep remembering the details.
All of a sudden, I'm living a double life where I have a car that never works. I've taken it in to be looked at multiple times. Like, it's just, then I have this trip that I have to reschedule that I never went on in the first place. And they keep asking about it because they're good people and they care and they want to check up
right,
with you. And you have to be like, I'm living this lie.
Oh, yes. You're living your new life, Agent Stacey Ross.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Oh, man. If anyone has a good story about that, just, I would love to hear it.
You know
it.
What?
206-421-3776.
The lesson here is just go do it. It's not worth trying to avoid the situation.
The lesson here is don't tell a lie that becomes a lie you have to maintain?
Correct, yes.
Yeah, it's exhausting. All right, it's Broncos, Seahawks in week one after all. So who has the advantage? Bucky Brooks has a theory. It might surprise you. That's next.
Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle's Sports Station.
Here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
All right. Before we get to our Mets-Mariners preview and bring on Brandon Gustafson of SeattleSports.com for an even more in-depth preview, looking at specific players. He's got some interesting numbers on Jesse Winker. I want to keep talking about this schedule release, specifically week one. The result of my losing bet this morning to bring in donuts, because I actually thought that this primetime rumor that there was going to be a primetime game against the Broncos would be a little later in the season. Just a little later. Maybe like week three. You know what I mean? Maybe a week four. Nope. Week one, getting this season started at home in primetime with the return of Russell Wilson. I know that it's going to be interesting for a number of reasons. And before I get to this Bucky Brooks sound, who has a very interesting theory about who has the upper hand, I wanted to talk about who has the advantage. It's Broncos, Seahawks, and week one after all. Who has the advantage? Here's why it's especially fascinating. Russell Wilson was on this team, knew everything about this team, had been with this team for 10 years, less than a calendar year ago. So this is not a drastically different team and a reunion between two parties after being apart, right? This is a reunion between two parties who know a lot about each other.
Yes, that is for sure. That is absolutely for sure. And that's what makes this matchup so particularly interesting, right? So when you talk about, you know, the matchup here, and I talk about the volatility of week one, it's also about the game planning, right? It's the preparation of week one. And if there's one thing that you could look at it from the Seahawks perspective is saying that, and this goes both ways now, right? I mean, Russell Wilson knows you very intimately. He knows, you know, your defense. He knows, you know, the operation of how you like to do it, went up against it every single day in practice. However, you also have a head coach that knows you better than anybody else and knows your weaknesses. And can he make life difficult on you? You know, I think that's the storyline to this that everybody is going to be very curious to watch how it unfolds out on the field.
Now, one person, NFL Network's Bucky Brooks, has a theory about how that could unfold. He says that, first of all, in the season opener, Pete Carroll, he's going to be throwing everything that made Russell Wilson a bad cook.
I'm the king of petty. I love petty, and I understand Ross has been a nice guy, and he's been shielded and all this, but I just have a feeling that in Seattle, the coaching staff and the players, they feel some kind of way about the way that he exited. And I think Pete Carroll has heard everybody talk about, he should have let Russ cook. He should have let Russ cook. So I just kind of have a funny feeling that he is going to say, okay, y'all want Russ to cook? We're going to make sure that Russ faces all the things that really made him a bad cook when he was up here, when we put too much on him.
Now, several text messages coming in, but saying like, oh, wait, but it's going to be a different defense. It's it Russell Wilson has seen this defense.
It will and it won't.
It will and it won't. Russell Wilson has seen this defense go through three different defensive coordinators. And what do we always say about the defense at the end of the day? Whose defense is it? Is it Ken Norton Jr.'s defense? Is it Chris Richard's defense? Is it Clint Hurt's defense?
No,
it's Pete Carroll's defense. That's what everyone says. Not just us. Not just anyone on the station. Not just every single person. Any reporter, anyone covering this team would tell you it's Pete Carroll's defense.
Yeah, right? It's 100%. And you brought in new voices. You brought in new eyes.
There are some different looks. There's different, obviously, personnel.
Mm-hmm.
Russell Wilson's never played against some of the guys that are going to be on this team. That being said.
Yeah.
You still know a lot about each other. This isn't going to be a defense Russell Wilson hasn't seen before.
No, I mean, he's been in this league for 10 years. However, are there defenses or defensive schemes that Pete Carroll and this group can look at over the history of Russell Wilson's career and say, what did he struggle with?
Yep.
Right? What did he struggle with? What can we try to exploit? And how can we make life difficult on Russell Wilson to where he is going to have to earn every bit of the success that he has in that game, right? And that's what I fully expect Pete Carroll to be able to do and this coaching staff to be able to do. On the flip side, it's like one of those things where it's like, I know that you know that I know.
This is exactly what this is.
And so we're just going to try to play this game of chess. And so that's why I think this is going to be really fun to watch this matchup. Yeah, people can talk about the storylines of how things ended and you know, the emotional feelings that are attached to that. There's no doubt about that, right? But to me, I am way more fascinated by the X's and O's element of this game in terms of how they are going to try to combat each other and what does that look like. The other factor, Stacey, is, you know, you can have the greatest defensive scheme in the world. If you don't have the ability to execute that defensive scheme, the personnel isn't there to execute the scheme, then, you know, that's also something that you have to look at as well. And vice versa on the other side offensively for the Denver Broncos. They've got a new head coach, right? As good as Nathaniel Hackett is offensively and well-regarded he is, especially after his time with the Green Bay Packers and everything else, this is a new marriage that's going on in Denver between head coach and quarterback. So, you know, we saw that happen last year with just Russell Wilson and a new offensive coordinator, a new system with Shane Waldron. So there is, you know, that element to it that, you know, you don't know what type of team is going to be rolling into Lumen Field on week one. Are they going to be ready to roll? Is this a team that is susceptible to being, you know, absolutely beat because they're not 100% gelling at this point, you know, to start the year? But I definitely believe that Pete Carroll and this coaching staff can make it difficult on Wilson by trying to attack some of the weak points that he has struggled with over the course of his career.
Absolutely. And I'll say, first of all, that you guys, I know that the scheme is changing. I don't need to be told. But I also, they have much of the same personnel. And if you're talking about a defense that looks and plays drastically different, what ultimately matters more? If it's base defense, if it's a 3-4 or 4-3, or if they have completely different players or not. The point is, you have a lot of the same personnel. Mm-hmm. And usually what can make a 3-4 defense vary drastically from a 4-3 is if you specifically draft for that defense. You know what I mean? Where you've got specific personnel with specific traits. This is much of the same personnel. Now, I actually am really optimistic about the Seahawks defense. I'm very fascinated to see what they're going to do.
Me too.
I think they have the advantage at safety. I'm really excited about Trey Brown. Very curious to see what Kobe Bryant looks like, if he can win out and take that role. I'm optimistic, just as I am every year, and maybe I'm burned on this every year, but I'm optimistic once again about the pass rush. Thought Daryl Taylor looked great. I mean, I think this defense has a ton of upside.
Can I say something about people texting in about this defense being different? I'm not going to listen to you as the texter saying how different this defense is going to be just because they switched to a 3-4 and it's Clint Hurd and Sean Desai and Carl Scott and all that versus what Pete Carroll and other people that are close to this scheme are saying to us. Pete Carroll said multiple times, yeah, we're going to be more of 3-4 principle, but it's not going to look that different from what we've done in the past. Cliff Avril coming on with Wyman and Bob yesterday saying literally the new defense isn't vastly different than what we've run before. They're just tweaks. There are different changes that you're making to highlight and strengthen the personnel that you have. They're not changing the entire scheme into something that is you know, completely different than what they've done before.
Yeah.
But they will make tweaks and changes to, let's say, highlight Daryl Taylor, highlight Uchenna Nwosu and Boye Mafe, and, you know, make sure that they're getting Jamal Adams more involved, right? They're going to make certain schematic changes within the overall big picture scheme of Pete Carroll's defense to try and highlight and bring the best out of their personnel. So just want to put that out there for everybody, because I don't want people to come in here and say, man, they're going to run this entirely different scheme and it's going to look so different, and then get to the season and be like, wait, this looks really similar.
Now, if you were, though, a Seahawks fan saying, you know, well, I want a reason to think that the Seahawks have an advantage. Oh, you have them. You absolutely have them, because Pete Carroll knows Russell Wilson. And guess what? Even if Russell Wilson is going to be looking at a defense that doesn't look drastically different, Pete Carroll knows exactly what Russell Wilson, who is not infallible, has struggled with throughout his career. And Bucky Brooks knows that, too.
Yes.
I think Pete Carroll is going to put all of that stuff out there
microwave.
Because cover two gave him problems. They couldn't throw in rhythm. And so we're going to see all of that stuff. And with a new team, you talk about the transition that he has to make in Denver. Oh, yeah, I think Pete Carroll is waiting for this.
I'm sure he is waiting for this, because that's the thing, is Russell Wilson does struggle with specific looks, right? Every quarterback has strengths. Every quarterback has weaknesses.
Mm-hmm.
And Pete Carroll knows very well what Russell Wilson's are, and some of those he struggled with pretty consistently.
Absolutely, and you're going to challenge him, right? You're going to challenge him and say, all right, this is what we're going to do. This is what we're going to do, and if you can beat us this way, then hats off to you. But we're going to challenge you, and we're going to make it really difficult, and we're going to try to stress some of those weak points throughout the game, and you're going to have to earn it every single down. And so I think that is something that, you know, when we get closer and closer to week one, as you get closer and closer to that matchup, you start getting into the details and the intricacies of what that can look like. I think this is going to be such a fun matchup. It's not just, like I said before, the storylines of, hey, they just recently parted, this is going to be the first game, and for Russell Wilson in a new uniform coming back to the, you know, crowd and the fans here in Seattle and all the emotions that are tied to it. But it's also going to be fascinating to watch what they decide to do schematically, you know, the Seahawks and the Denver Broncos, vice versa, to combat that, very, very, you know, intimate knowledge that these guys have of one another.
It's Jake and Stace. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. In 15 minutes, 20 minutes, Brandon Gustafson is going to join us. He's a reporter for Seattle Sports, and he knows a ton about all of these players, obviously, but he has some really interesting stuff on Jesse Winker, a couple of the Mariners pitchers that I think are going to be good for you guys to know ahead of this Mets-Mariners series. So before we get to Brandon, we're going to preview that series next. Don't go anywhere.
Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports Station.
Here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
All right. In 15 minutes, we are going to take a closer look at some important stats for these Mariners players as they head into a 9-game road trip. Before then, though, I'm not going to look ahead 9 games. It's too far. As Shannon Dreher would say, we're not in the business of predictions. Or rather, she isn't. I am, but that's fine. Series preview, though, here for the next 3 games, just for this weekend. Mets, Mariners, the best team in the National League, and it's not going to be easy. Pitching probables for Seattle's Marco Gonzalez, George Kirby, and Robbie Ray in order. For the Mets, you've got Max Scherzer, Chris Bassett, and Carlos Carrasco. Max Scherzer this year, so that game going to be today. He is 4-1 with a 2.92 ERA. Now, Jake, hear me out. Max Scherzer against St. Louis, he pitched 7 innings, gave up just 2 hits, no runs, fantastic. Walked only 1, struck out 10. Amazing game from him. Okay. On the first versus Philly, he gave up 5 hits through 6, 4 earned runs, not so great. Still struck out 9, though, right? Like, he's still striking out.
Mm-hmm.
However, his most recent start,
yes,
6 innings pitch, which is, like, fantastic. It was a loss, though. He gave up 3 earned runs, struck out 7, still pretty decent numbers. 10 hits, though. I'm telling you, there's a chance.
Okay.
I'm telling you, there's a chance.
I was looking for hope, and you provided it.
I just gave it to you.
You just gave it to me.
Mariners are going to sweep the Mets. You heard it here first, folks. When I said 10 hits off Max Scherzer, that is just the kind of self, what's it called? When you get evidence that confirms only your beliefs because you seek out evidence that confirms only your beliefs.
Yes.
Yeah. The self-confirming, whatever it is. That's exactly what I did. I sound like a genius right now. If anyone was wondering, the GPA I got in psychology in college, that's none of your business, but it was below a 2.0.
Look, I will take it. Whatever, deep dive that you just had to do for Max Scherzer.
Yeah, I went to MLB.com.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Look, this is something that I don't necessarily have a ton of confidence in, just with the way that the Mariners are swinging the bat or lack thereof right now. I mean, Stacey, let's just be honest.
Be of little faith,
look
brother.
Look at me. This team, they have majority of their lineup is hitting under 250.
Yeah, well, guess what?
Then
that's
you
better
add
than 200.
Somewhere around.
Well over the Mendoza
you
line.
You have four batters in this lineup guaranteed that are hitting below 200.
Okay, once again, one of them is a catcher. Okay. From whom I don't expect a ton.
Okay. Well, I love your optimism, and I am all here for it, and I would love nothing more. Nothing more. But I'm also looking at this and going, man, Marco Gonzalez is going to have to pitch a game. He is going to have to pitch a game, and he has really struggled coming out of the gate. I mean, he has. And look, there's multiple ways that you can look at Marco Gonzalez's start to the season. You could say, hey, he has really struggled to get out on the right foot and has given up a ton of runs. You could look at it and try to come up with excuses, in my opinion, with the fact that when Marco Gonzalez has pitched, he also hasn't had the greatest defense behind him. Boy Howdy on Twitter put out a stat, Mariner stats with Marco Gonzalez on the mound after an error is committed, okay? Five innings in 2022. It's occurred in five different innings in 2022 for him.
Okay.
11 runs allowed, two doubles, three home runs, one scoreless
after
inning.
After an initial error.
So you could put that and say, well, the defense isn't playing good behind Marco Gonzalez. That's one way to interpret it, and I can understand that hey, if the defense does their job, Marco's out of the jam and you're moving on. Or you could look at it and say, adversity strikes. And Marco crumbles a little bit. And that is something that I want to avoid at all costs.
Okay.
And I want to see a good, clean outing from Marco. I want to see good defense behind him. And that's what it's going to take for the Mariners to have a chance. The Mariners are struggling to produce runs right now. They're going to struggle to produce runs against Max Scherzer. Even giving up 10 hits, Stacey, Max Scherzer only gave up three runs. He only gave up three runs. So you're going to have a good outing from Marco Gonzalez in the bullpen on the mound for them to have a chance in this series in particular, because unless the bats go crazy against one of the best pitching staffs in all of baseball, these are going to have to be tight wins. These are going to have to be one-run win ball games, and that was something the Mariners were able to do extremely well last year, and they're going to have to dip into that bag if they're going to come out with a win in New York.
I did not even specifically look at team hitting. We talked all pitching, so there's still – if you were wondering if the Mets have been great offensively – the answer, unfortunately, is yes. But not one of the best in the league, but OPS is still top 10. They've got some big hitters in that lineup. Really, the big matchups are going to be on the pitching staff. We knew that they'd have a solid one, not just heading into the year, but specifically this series. They've got some big guys in that series. But we are going to take a look at the Mariners.
Curtis is texting us. He's yelling at us. He said, confirm your priors. That's what it's called.
Confirm your priors?
Yeah.
What do you mean? That's what the prophecy thing?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Or is he telling me to tell you guys about Jared Kelnick, which was his prediction?
Maybe.
I don't know. Curtis, I don't understand. God, he's going to be so mad at me.
He is. He's really going to be upset.
Brady, you're doing a great job. You don't yell at me. Good job, Brady.
Curtis is producing at home right now, and so all he has is the ability to text us right now, and he's just like
so
angry texting
mad.
Us. Come on, remember! Remember your...
Oh, my God. He just said, I'm so mad at you, Stacey. I'm going to turn off my notifications. All right. We are going to bring on Brandon Gustafson next to take a look at the Mariners side of things. We talked about the Mets pitching staff, but I know that what you guys want to know is, can Jesse Winker get right? What can they do without Mitch Haniger? What are we going to see from Kelnick when the spotlight will be on him in New York? So we'll talk about all of that next. Don't go anywhere.